Welcome back to the program, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Thursday morning. Kind of a cool, somewhat ugly, actually, Thursday morning. I mean, it's cold, it's windy. You can see the snow flurries that are plaguing part of the province right now. I don't expect they're going to stick around, but the little trick-or-treaters tomorrow are going to be chilly. Let's just put it that way. Not exactly warm weather in the forecast over the next little while. Well, it's hard to believe that it's been, I'm going to say 8 months, but it's probably been much more than that since we've been talking tariffs. When the first tariffs were imposed was about 8 months ago on Canadian goods. But the impacts are still being felt across Canada. And having said that, I mean, how often have you and I talked about the fact that it feels like we're becoming a little bit desensitized to the topic? I don't want to say we've made peace with it. Obviously, we know the effect that they are having on our country, but we're riding the wave a little bit easier than we were off the start. That being said, we know industries are still being struck with tariffs. It is having an impact here at home. We talk about agriculture, and those are the canola tariffs. But with U.S., of course, on steel and aluminum, on auto manufacturing, on softwood lumber, the impacts are being felt not just by those industries, but by businesses who use some of those. I think about the beer industry, for example, and aluminum cans. So even though the beer industry isn't necessarily directly impacted by tariffs, you bet your bottom dollar that they are impacted in a way that they have to try and revise business models and make tough decisions. So we thought, you know what, this would be a good time to bring on a few guests. And the three guests we've got, I'm very proud and happy that we've been able to secure. Each of them a great leader in their own right, in their own industry. And all three of these leaders have been on our program before. So I'm going to start with Bill Huber, who is in studio with me. Bill is the president of the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities. Bill, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having us, Evan. Appreciate it very much.
Prabha Ramaswamy is the CEO of the Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce. Prabha joins us from her office in Saskatoon. Prabha, thank you for taking the call.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
And Ian Lee, who we have had on our program a number of times, Carleton University Business Associate Professor, joining us from his office in Ottawa. Ian, thank you for joining the program.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Let's start broadly. And I basically want to know your thoughts on the current state of international trade for Canada. We've weathered the storm. We've been in and out of trade negotiations over the last number of months. Are we in a better position? Are we facing headwinds still? Prabha, maybe I'll start with you.
For sure. Thank you, Evan. I will say that we've never seen anything like this. We're living in an environment of absolute volatility and unpredictability. And even as a business, if you're not doing trade with the United States or China, it's putting a damper on whether our businesses are willing to make investments in infrastructure expansion. Canada has 77% of Canada's exports go to the United States. 55% of Saskatchewan's exports go to the United States. And what is important for us to understand is we cannot replace this trading partner overnight. And so we're pleased that we're focusing as a country on diversifying our trading partners, and the Prime Minister is spending a lot of time in Europe as well. We need to do more of that while continuing to work on that trading relationship with the United States. It's imperative that Prime Minister Carney finds a way to re-engage with President Trump and his administration on trade with the United States. And I do want to make a positive comment, Evan, and we're really pleased to note that Prime Minister Carney's meeting with the President of China here, I think it's tomorrow, and we've been calling for that in terms of the canola industry, which is an industry that contributes $43.7 billion to the economy. And we've been asking and calling for the Prime Minister to meet directly with the President and reset that relationship with China. Canola, 55% of the total canola that's exported to China actually comes from our province. And so this is an important time for us as a province, and the meeting tomorrow is critical to us.
Prabha Ramaswamy is my guest. Bill is chomping at the bit here because when I heard Prabha say that, you know, we're facing this volatility. I feel like agriculture knows volatility in and out, because it's not just trade tariffs, Bill. It happens every year. It could be weather, could be pests, could be whatever. How are you seeing it on behalf of SARM?
Well, you're exactly right, Evan. It's a large issue, and you said it perfectly that, you know, the United States is our closest neighbor and one of our biggest trading partners, along with China. And with the tariffs that were implemented on canola in the past months, it's basically crippled our industry. There hasn't been a shipment of canola to China since August. So that would be old crop. There's been no new crop. And when those tariffs first came on, it reduced our price by, I'd say, close to $2 a bushel, which is devastating because it wasn't great to start with. But, you know, these things will recover, and I think trade is a very important thing, but we got to be very cautious of how we deal with our trading partners. And we've all learned from experience in the past months that President Trump he pushes back sometimes, so I think we got to handle it in a polite, gentle manner, and I think we're doing that with our premier and our secretary to the prime minister, Cody Blois. They've both been in China, and they didn't get their arms up and their elbows out or their fists up. They're trying to work through it in a diplomatic manner. It's a tough issue to deal with. I feel optimistic that it will be resolved in the months ahead, not days, but hopefully it's sooner than months.
SARM President Bill Huber. Ian, I want to bring you into this conversation. You, of course, look at this at that 10,000-foot angle as a business associate professor. Your thoughts on where we're at right now in this, who knows how long this is going to go?
Right, and I don't disagree with anything that Prabha said or Bill said, but I want to amplify or go to 10,000 or 25,000 feet or whatever it is. I think in the short run, we're in a very dire and deep and dark place. I do not believe that Premier Ford helped the cause. I think he made it worse. I'm not here to defend Donald Trump whatsoever. But the United States is the largest economy on the planet Earth. $30 trillion. Anyone who denies that hasn't looked at the data. China is a distant number two. Yes, China is very important. I've been teaching there since 1997, every year in Shanghai. I'm going there in April, teaching in an MBA. Very important, especially for Western Canada. But I want to go even larger than this. Trump, I believe, in this whole crisis we're in, which is very dire and dark right now in the short run, I have to agree with Jean Charest, who said only a week ago, one day, crazy as this sounds, we're going to look back and thank Donald Trump, because it's forcing us, Canadians, all of us, to confront our illusions and delusions for the last, I would say, 60 to 70 years. I would say going all the way back to 65 in the auto pack. And Central Canada, and I'm from Central Canada, even though my late mother grew up in Alfrost, Saskatchewan. I am bred and raised in Ottawa. I'm an Ottawa guy. And I believe that in Central Canada, we've made a huge mistake since 1965 until now. Ontario and the national government have told Canadians that manufacturing was our future. And it was going to be the center of, you know, we were going to become a manufacturing, if not a superpower, we were going to become a powerful player in the world. And we went through gazillions of Bombardier to lift them up to be a competitor with Boeing and Airbus. And of course, we poured billions more into the auto sector. We are now learning that that was a mistake. It was a mistake because we never were ever going to have a comparative advantage in manufacturing. Why? And I'm not anti-car or anti-making things. Because we are a small country. We like to think because we're geographically huge, therefore we're huge in every sense. No, we're not. We are smaller than the state of California with 40 million people. So what? Manufacturing is massively capital intensive, as in billions upon billions. And it's also R&D intensive. Last year, it was estimated that the R&D in auto manufacturing in the world was 150 billion euros. That's 200 billion euros. Let me be blunt. We've never been big enough to ever compete seriously in manufacturing, unless and except we had access to one of the three giant markets in the world. One's called China, one's called Europe, and one's called the U.S. We've never, the Europeans and the Chinese have always kept out competitors from manufacturing. And that meant we had to be have access to the States, which we did from 1965 until last week when Trump said the game is over. So now we can finally wake up to what has been trivialized by the central Canadian government and decision makers. They've trivialized resource sector. They've said it was low tech, it was dirty, it was unprofitable, and this is not true. Trevor Tome at Calgary, I'll wrap up in 1 second. Trevor Tome, recently a great young economist at Calgary, and before him, Stephen Gordon at Laval University in Quebec, showed in empirical hard data that the resource sector, especially oil and gas, I'll be honest, but resource writ large, has been responsible for something like 80% of the increase in our prosperity for the last third of a century. Manufacturing has always had lower productivity. It's always been far less profitable than the resource sector. In other words, our future in the past and the present and the future was, should have been, and always will be, the resource sector. So now is the time we can finally pivot and accept that we are not going to be successful in auto manufacturing, and we should take a page out of Australia's book. When they exited auto manufacturing in 2017, they don't make a single car anymore, and they really doubled down and tripled down on resource sector, especially mining, and their standard of living has gone up and surpassed Canada on a per capita basis. So that's what I'm arguing, is that we need to use this crisis as the opportunity, and if that involves taking off the tariffs on Chinese EVs because we can't make a $20,000 EV in Canada, it's preposterous to say that, well, then let's do it. And if that brings back canola exports out west to China, well, great. That's even greater progress.
Thanks, Ian. I'm going to jump in and take a break here. We've got three great guests. We're talking tariffs on a roundtable discussion with Ian Lee, Carleton University, Prabha Ramaswamy, CEO of the Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce, and Bill Huber, the president of SARM. We'll take a break. We'll be right back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Great start to the conversation already. It's our tariff roundtable. I've got Bill Huber joining me, the president of SARM, Ian Lee, Carleton University Business Associate Professor, and Prabha Ramaswamy, who is the CEO of the Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce. And Prabha, off air during the break, you were kind of building on what Ian was talking about there and the importance of the natural resource sector. Go ahead.
Yes, we've been working with the federal government advocating for Saskatchewan and Western Canada with the federal government. We've been hammering home the fact that the natural resource sector is critical. And let me just drill down to give you an example. Saskatchewan, we supply 85%. Canada, Saskatchewan supplies 85% of the potash that goes to the United States, and 27% of the uranium comes from here to the United States. And Saskatchewan uranium powers 1 in 17 U.S. homes. So we've been calling on the federal government to recognize how important this industry is to the economic growth of our country as a whole. In fact, last week when we were in Ottawa hammering home the fact that the agriculture portfolio requires much more prominence because it's a critical driver of economic growth in our country. So I absolutely echo Ian's comments on that.
So, Bill, maybe we'll bring you in. You just heard Prabha talk about the importance of agriculture. We often talk about canola, but the tariffs are impacting so many other industries.
Exactly. And one of those industries is manufacturing. And you talk quite a bit about manufacturing, Ian. But, you know, you got to remember in this province, we have Borgo Industries. We have Degelman Industries, just to name a couple. We have Honeybee Manufacturing. Those are all manufacturing firms that supply a lot of our equipment to our agriculture producers that grow canola. But we have 44% of the arable land in agriculture in this province out of Canada. And we grow a lot of canola here. And it's with these tariffs on, we've seen prices drop substantially, like I mentioned before. And it's really affecting our agriculture producers financially. It's a time of year when we got payments to make to lending institutions for crop inputs, for mortgages on land. Land prices are as high as they've been in many, many years, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, we have to make sure our producers can pay their bills and continue on and attract young people into the industry because it's an aging population.
Can you talk about, because we do talk about canola, Bill, a lot, but what about pork and peas and beef? Like the, these industries are all being impacted.
Yes, they certainly are. And I'll start a little bit on the beef part and then go on to pork. I'm not as familiar with pork as I am beef. But, you know, we're experiencing some of the highest prices in the beef industry right now. And that's great for our producers because ever since May of 2003, we're still in a catch-up mode. And prices are extremely high now, which is beneficial to our producers. But a lot of these producers in Western Saskatchewan have suffered drought for many, many years, and they need a little bit of help. But with the tariffs and some of the announcements that President Trump has made in the last days with propping up the dollar in Argentina and importing beef into the United States because of high prices across the counter, you know, that's directly affecting our markets here already. We've seen a decrease in calf prices in the last week. They rebounded a wee bit yesterday, but they've been down 10 to 20 cents over where they were a couple of weeks ago. So mm-hmm. we've got to be really cautious about that. We need our beef producers. We need our cow herd to repopulate here in this country, in this province.
Bill Huber, president of SARM. Ian Lee, I want to come back to you, Carleton University associate business professor. Is there a way, because we talk about the impact of tariffs and the cost, and we know that tariffs are actually a cost to people in the United States, those American tariffs on Canadian goods. We have some counter tariffs, but there's also a trickle effect of reduced business, of scared investments. Yeah. Is there a way to measure that, the cost to Canada in the trickle-down effect, Ian?
Yes, but before I answer that question, I want to respond to something Bill said. I don't want to leave your listeners with the idea I'm saying that the government should go in and force manufacturers to close down. I've never, ever said that. The
right.
government shouldn't force any business to close down. If it's making money, I'm a former banker. I was 9 years in banking, lending money, real money, to real businesses called small and medium-sized enterprises. If they're making money, wonderful. Keep on going. I am talking about the deliberate government policies of Ontario, Quebec, and the federal government to pour billions and billions and billions over 60, 70 years into a bottomless pit called manufacturing in Central Canada. And I am from Central Canada. I'm not against anybody making money. I think capitalism, I am a red meat capitalist. I'm talking about government subsidies and picking winners and losers as they tried to do with Bombardier, which was doomed to fail from the get-go because it was obvious Boeing and Airbus would never allow that. They would retaliate, which is exactly what they did do. And we did it again, the mistake on the EV plants, pouring over $50 billion when the Chinese and the Europeans and the Americans are not going to let us go in and take their jobs with those plants. That's what I'm talking about.
Gotcha.
If there's manufacturers in Saskatchewan making product and they're successful and they're doing it without government money, I salute them. Keep on going. I'm talking about what we've done in Ontario, and the federal government has privileged manufacturing over the resource sector for as long as my entire lifetime.
Okay, Ian, I'm going to pause you.
Bang for buck from resources than there is from manufacturing. People don't realize this. Manufacturing has declined from 30% of GDP in 1970 to 10% today. And the auto industry, which many people probably think is the biggest industry of all in this country, it isn't. It's down to 2% of GDP. It's just a tiny little contributor, and yet we pour gargantuan amounts of money into it. Very quickly.
Okay, no, Ian, I got to jump in. I got to jump in, Ian.
So does Stats Canada. And so does
sorry, Canada. We might have to pause, Ian, for a second. I'm sorry. I got to jump in because we got to take a break. So when you said I'm a red meat capitalist, both Bill and I looked at each other and smiled. That's a good expression. I like it. Okay, we got to take a break. We'll come back. I'll get you to answer the question of a way to measure the trickle-down effect when we come back.
Too.
Okay, good stuff. We'll be right back. Our panelists, Ian Lee, Prabha Ramaswamy, and Bill Huber. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the show. It's Evan Bray, and we are having such a good conversation on a tariff roundtable. I couldn't be more pleased with the three guests that we have been able to have join us for a full hour. Bill Huber joining us in studio. Bill's the president of the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities. Prabha Ramaswamy is the CEO of the Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce. And Ian Lee is with Carleton University, business associate professor. And just before the break, I asked you a question. You gave me a great answer, Ian, but it had nothing to do with the question I asked you. and I love that you do that, because you've done that to me before. But I am going to bring you back to the question. And the question was, is there a way, you know, we can measure the impact of the softwood lumber tariffs directly on the softwood lumber industry. But if we look at Canada as a whole, there's a huge trickle-down effect that almost is hard to put your finger on to the cost that tariffs and this trade atmosphere is causing for Canada. What are your thoughts on that? Can that even be measured?
Yes, and I'll be very direct and to the point this time. people may want to look at the MPR, Monetary Policy Report, released yesterday by the Bank of Canada. They address this question head-on, chart one. Decline in exports pulled down GDP, and it's about tariffs. Trevor Tome has published some excellent research for our McDonald Laurier Institute, breaking it down by industry, and so has, of course, StatsCan. They have unbelievable data on the Canadian economy by industry across the whole country, and there's a report out September 18th, 2025, from StatsCan, impact of tariffs on businesses. So, yes, there is good data. I mean, it gets very messy because, you know, it's broken down on a certain period of time and certain types of industries and so on. But, yes, it can be measured. And, yes, the impact is overwhelmingly negative for Canada. The tariffs are driving down our GDP, and they're driving down our exports. And you can measure it and it is being measured on a business or industry by industry basis.
I just want to clarify, Ian, when you go on your rants, I love it. So I'm not trying to dissuade you from it. I just have, you know, I got to hit the commercial break every once in a while.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to get that point out. The ROIC, or the return on natural resources, has always been higher than manufactured goods.
Right.
But in Ottawa, there is this myopia that believes, I call it manufacturing fetishism. You know, Karl Marx talked about commodity fetishism, so I'm trying to be a little cute there.
I got you.
It's manufacturing fetishism by the Laurentian elites in Ottawa, and Montreal, and Toronto, that manufacturing is better than resources. And the statistical, empirical, econometric data contradicts that belief by Ottawa.
I see. I pushed you off the shore and set you sail again. Prabha, I'm gonna come to you with this question, but Bill, I'm going to get you to chime in as well, because you both have very strong provincial views. Obviously, your provincial leaders, Prabha, the CEO of the Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce. When we talk tariffs and the impact of tariffs and trade, does it have a similar impact on urban versus rural, which, of course, in our province, there's lots of blurred lines, but there's lots of distinct ones as well. Prabha?
Yeah, that's a great question, Evan. I mean, when you think about the type of a business, so if you have a beer company in rural Saskatchewan, and you have a similar company in urban Saskatchewan, and if I need as my input aluminium, the experience is going to be, and the impact of tariffs is going to be exactly the same regardless of geography. We've been consulting with our members, and what we are hearing from them is the larger companies really want us to focus on renegotiating the Canada-US-Mexico deal. Because, Evan, the reality is 95% of goods right now are CUSMA, which is the Canada-US-Mexico Agreement, compliant, not subject to tariffs. So the larger companies are saying it's critical we get that done. The federal government is in the process of implementing consultations on that, and that deal has to be completed by July 1, 2026. Our small and medium-sized businesses, on the other hand, are apprehensive and reticent about making investments in equipment, infrastructure, or expansion because of the shroud of uncertainty that exists right now. Now, on a positive note, what we're also hearing is that there's a much more, there's a big spotlight on shop locals. So people, consumers are willing to spend more money to buy local, like buy Canadian groceries, as opposed to American groceries, even if American groceries are cheaper. So that's sort of what we're hearing.
Mm-hmm. Bill?
Okay, yes. I think that the tariffs are, you know, we've concentrated totally on the canola issue. But this reflects urban municipalities, rural municipalities, and all of our 296 members are directly or indirectly somehow connected to agriculture. And agriculture producers are suffering right now because of the tariffs, not just on canola, but there's other commodities that we export. You know, there's cereal grains, pulses to India, and of course beef to the U.S. and other countries around the Pacific Rim. And that's very important to Saskatchewan. But without the support and the activity and the prosperity in our agriculture community in rural Saskatchewan, our towns and villages and cities also suffer. Because that's where we go to get our parts. We need our dealerships in these communities, our grocery stores, our drug stores, our doctors, and whatever you need for services. Those people are located in our towns and villages and cities. And we so much need them. So what? When farmers have money, they spend it. It's just plain as simple as that.
And you were part of a delegation, Bill, recently that were in Ottawa talking about all of these important things. Do you get a sense that Ottawa understands this?
Yes, they understand it. And I think it's our relationship in trying to build some of these things and accomplish some of our lobby trips is maybe looking more optimistic in the last months. But when we were there with Minister Schmaltz 2 or 3 weeks ago, I continually stressed at every meeting we had with every minister or every shadow minister how important it is for our cities and towns and small communities to work together. We're talking about a road or a bridge in rural Saskatchewan, that's connectivity to these small towns and villages where we have to rely on our essential needs. But it's also, we need community involvement with skating rinks and swimming pools, rec centers, so that we have places for our kids and our young people to get involved in at an early age and keep them occupied in the winter months and summer months and keep them off the streets and off their cell phones where they can actually participate with other youth at their age to build that relationship going forward to just for a better upbringing.
Bill Huber, Prabha Ramaswamy, and Ian Lee, my guests today on the Tariff Roundtable. Ian, I'll come back to you here. We are going to be hearing a federal budget brought forward next week, and in there will be many, many things that talk about and deal with the issue that we're discussing today.
Yes.
We are hearing about nation-building projects. We are hearing about industrial carbon pricing and climate initiatives. Is it possible, and I'm asking this with a skepticism, is it possible that this country can do both successfully?
Not successfully. There's a trade-off, as there always is in public policy. You know, when you emphasize equity, you decrease efficiency. This has been studied by Nobel laureates, by the way. You know, there's always the trade-off. I'm not saying throw out equity. I'm just saying that there is a trade-off. And there's a trade-off here. When we impose those emissions, which I don't support, I don't deny global warming. It's real. But, you know, the two largest economies in the world produce the two largest amounts of emissions, and that's China and the United States. The data's on the web. Anybody can look it up. It's produced by every government showing that. And we are a rounding error in the world emissions. If a horrible thought, if some asteroids hit Canada and wiped out every human being, horrible as that thought is, the net impact on global warming would be a statistical rounding error of the reduction of emissions out of Canada. I'm not saying we shouldn't do anything. We are doing lots of things. We're retrofitting houses. We're making cars more efficient, on and on and on. But we need growth. We need to diversify. And so those things that they're doing, those policies, are going to hurt our reindustrialize, our refocus on natural resources. Carney's saying the right thing about becoming a world energy and natural resource superpower. But then he's got to walk the talk. And we're going to find out in the budget whether they are going to walk the talk.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. Our last break, we'll come back with our panelists finishing up basically with last thoughts. What do next steps look like? What should the priorities be? Where should the focus go? Ian Lee, Carleton University, Prabha Ramaswamy, Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce, Bill Huber, Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities. It's our roundtable on tariffs here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I'll never be your beast, the burden. Welcome back to the show, Evan Bray, on our tariff roundtable discussion, wrapping up with three great guests, Ian Lee from Carleton University, Prabhu Ramaswamy from the Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce, and Bill Huber from the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities. Bill, maybe I'll start with you, giving each of you about a minute and a half, your thoughts on next steps, where the priorities should be focused.
Well, I think next steps are, I think our governments, both federal and provincially, especially the federal government, our prime minister, parliamentary secretary to the prime minister, have to be up in front and be in China and be in some of these countries and talk trade and talk tariffs. And somehow with a kind voice and open hearts and open minds, I really believe that we can settle these disputes we're having. There's, like I said before, the United States is one of our biggest trading partners. We can't lose them over a silly dispute over a tariffs on electric vehicles. So we have to move forward, and we can't strain that relationship. The CUSMA agreements are under review now and be talked about in the future. So we need that to stay there. And it's not only the agriculture products, but there's all kinds of things that are exported out of this great province of ours. We've got a vast of wealth in Saskatchewan. We've got critical minerals that are so important around the world. We talked about potash, livestock. We produce some of the best beef in the world, and our purebred exports are very, very critical to other countries. Canadian Western Agribition coming up in weeks. Beef and pork and chicken and dairy industry, pulses. The list goes on and on. What we can provide to the GDP of this great nation.
I'll turn it over to Prabhu Ramaswamy. Thoughts on priorities and next steps?
Well, I think three things, Evan. The one silver lining in all of this is we came together as Canadians, as patriotic Canadians, in a way we never have. And for the first time, we are really focused on strengthening our internal domestic economy, which we did not do when this happened in 2017. And there's a real focus on removing internal trade barriers, which the Saskatchewan Chamber has been advocating for strongly, because the Canadian Chamber of Commerce has cited that getting rid of internal trade barriers can unlock somewhere between $30 billion to $150 billion. So kudos to the government of Saskatchewan for introducing the Internal Trade Promotions Act. The second thing that needs to happen very quickly is we need to re-engage with the United States, and we need to continue to have a dialogue with President Trump and his administration, and Prime Minister Carney has to find a way to do that. It's one trade talk, one negotiation. We also, like Bill said, need to re-engage with China. We need to reset that relationship with China. And the final thing I'll say around nation-building projects, which is the third thing we need to do, is nation-building projects, the vision of Prime Minister is commendable, but we cannot move that forward without repealing, revising, or amending some policies and regulations, like caps on emissions on oil and gas, the Federal Impact Assessment Act, the moratorium on oil tankers act, and a few more policies. So I think we have three pillars and three buckets that we need to move forward on.
Three good buckets. Ian Lee, final word to you. Next steps, priorities, and focuses.
I echo and agree with both Bill and Prabhu. Number one, we have to have a renewed CUSMA. The KPMG survey that just came out of the largest corporations in Canada, 90%. That's unbelievable. That's almost unanimity. Said it is the greatest threat to Canada is not having a CUSMA. I completely agree. I've supported every free trade agreement since 1988, starting with the FTA and then NAFTA. Anybody who thinks that we can pivot away from the United States are delusional. I'm sorry, they are. Nobody's going to lift Canada up and move it halfway around the world away from the U.S. We are joined at the hip till the end of time with the largest economy in the world. That's number one. Number two, in the budget, I really hope, I know Mark Carney is a smart man. You know, he worked in a bank for 10 years. That makes him a good guy. Like, you know, I worked in a bank. That's reality, everybody. And he can read the data. And manufacturing is dying before our eyes because Donald Trump said you're not going to be able to export to us anymore. And that's the only way that mass market auto manufacturing can succeed. This is an opportunity to redirect the billions and billions and billions we've poured down that sinkhole and pivot to natural resources. Yes, open up to China, get rid of the tariffs on China because we're not going to build cars anymore. So let's take the tariffs off the Chinese EVs. We have to deal with China very carefully. They're not our friend, but that does not mean we can't do business with them with natural resources that are not technologically sensitive, unlike high-tech stuff.
Right.
And so that's where we've got to go, and I hope, I really hope that he does that in this budget for the future of our country.
Ian Lee, Prabhu Ramaswamy, Bill Huber, this has been outstanding. We've reached the end of our time. Thank you all three for joining us and sharing your leadership, your wisdom. I appreciate it. We'll have to do this again.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Great to have all three on a tariff roundtable discussion. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.